Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! That was an information-packed hour, was it not? You kind of wish that maybe Eric Holder or Barack Obama or maybe Rahm Emanuel or just about anybody in the Obama administration had been listening to that. Maybe some congressional Democrats. Maybe a senator or two. Maybe they could have figured out that we do not have to let these manifest putrefactions of our constitutional form of government take place. One may certainly wish, and one may hope. Remember, we're hoping. But before we can ever accomplish any of the stuff that was being contemplated. Before we can put any of that into motion, we've got to stop surrendering our way to freedom. And that is exactly what we have been dealing with. You know that from last night and from the night before. Surrendering our way to peace and freedom in the Congress of the United States. Haven't read anything today about how last night's little soiree at the White House went. You know, after all the glad-handing and aw-shucksing and back-slapping and won't you be an American with us, please, Mr. Republican Congressman, and they all stuck their middle fingers in the air at Working America yesterday, every last Republican in the House of Representatives, reminiscent of nothing so much as every last Republican in the House of Representatives voting against the Social Security Act, yea, verily, what, three generations ago? Don't know how the soiree went last night, the little cocktail party at the White House that featured the pus-infested gut buckets like Kentucky's Mitch McConnell and John Kyle of Arizona and the freaks from the House as well as the Democrats. Surrenderers and surrenderees, basically. This is so upside down. We've got a majority, and yet we're the ones walking up with our sword to the Republicans and saying, here, you lost the war, we surrender. What? What's that cute little word of which I'm so fond? We have evidence. And I have to tell you, that this is not evidence that I find to be positive in nature. I said last night, and there was some disagreement, I said last night that the Repiglicans will do everything that they can to kill the idea of rejuvenating America because America has to continue to fail under Barack Obama because Repiglicans, remember, first, last, and always put party ahead of country. I said that the stimulus package has to fail in the United States Senate, and that I sincerely doubt if Harry Reid has the stomach for that fight. And please understand, as a Democrat, a lifelong one, I've never voted for anybody but a Democrat, with the exception of the last gubernatorial race in this state. Please understand, it gives me no joy to note something so sad and sorry and pathetic. But we are members, proud members of the reality-based community here on the Horn, and I'm not going to pee on your shoes and tell you that it's raining. So I don't think Harry Reid's going to have the stomach for this fight. And it appears that the guys who lost are going to get surrendered to again. By way of that, I offer you a guy who when he talks, sounds like he spends, sits there huffing the fumes out of a can of cooking spray or something at breakfast every morning. I'm talking about South Carolina's
President
Jim Demented.
Obama basically said he'll be back to us next month for more money to try to fix the credit problem. But if we really want to fix the situation, we need to make sure the housing market gets moving, that the credit market works. This bill doesn't do anything to help in that area, and yet we're spending $1 trillion.
So then ultimately we wonder what the Senate version is going to be, and that's going to take some time. How long?
Well, we'll be debating it all of next week. The Senate committee that addresses this has produced a bill, and we'll start talking about it next week. It's very much like the House bill. They rejected every Republican amendment. So this idea of bipartisanship is a bunch of rhetoric. There is no bipartisanship on this massive spending bill. But I think it is going to help define the Republicans and the Democrats once again, because every Republican in the House rejected this, and I think every Republican in the Senate might do as well.
Did you get that? Every Republican in the Senate will reject the stimulus bill. Do you understand what that means? I'm sure you do. If every Republican in the Senate rejects the stimulus bill, that means it will die in the Senate. It will die in the Senate because Harry Reid won't be able to get cloture. Harry Reid won't be able to get the 60 votes necessary to forestall a filibuster. Watch and see. I don't want to be right on this. I'm not trying to be a naysayer. But watch and see. Watch and see. Let's go straight to the phones this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Sandra.
Sandra, what's up?
I listened to your show yesterday, and I heard I forgot who called, but the people who are already trying to apologize for Obama, no disrespect, which of course means I'm gonna disrespect, but come on, yo, this fool is already bending over having meetings with these people. I thought he won the election.
Well, yeah, he said so. Yeah, he said, I won.
And the thing is, it's like, if it's clear to you and me, i.e., they will not let this stimulus package through unless the Democrats get a spine and do it themselves, because it will work. Thus, the Republicans will be even further out of power. So wake the hell up. They're not. They're doing what they.
And don't think for a minute that, Sandra, don't think for a minute that they don't know where they stand. Have you seen this new Gallup poll map?
No, I haven't.
There are only 4 heavy majority Republican states left in the Union. Alaska, Idaho, Utah, maybe Wyoming. That's it. Even Alabama has turned gray. Tennessee is light blue, even though they've got a squirrely Republican legislature. These guys are teetering on the brink, but they're acting like they're full of vim and vigor.
No, they're not acting like anything. The Democrats can't seem
well,
to
there
figure
you go.
Out what it means to have power. And if I hear about Obama having another, you know what? That speech he gave when he became president, when he's talking about if you unclench your fist. Well, he has that right here, okay? He's trying to reach out to these motherfuckers. They're flinched, their fist is clenched, and ain't unopening. So he don't have to go to the Muslim world for that. He can have that right here.
Well, ain't that the truth? Why is this so hard to get, Sandra?
I don't know, but I tell you what.
I mean, I want to live. Let me be 100% clear about this. I want to live in the Obama in the America that Obama sees.
Well, I don't know. Okay, well, yeah.
Where we reach out to each other and we're all Americans here and we're working for the common good. But the minute you say the common good to a repiglick, and Sandra, he says, common, That's the root form of communism.
Right. I know. I mean, the thing is, though, it's just, you know, their behavior is what people do who can see the forest beyond the trees, which obviously the Democrats can't, because if they could, they would just say, okay, the hell with you, and pass the bill, threaten some Republicans with the
tools. Tell them they're going to take the filibuster away. You realize that we've potentially got the votes to simply eliminate the filibuster. That thing dies, if you remember the whole nuclear option debate, Sandra. The filibuster dies on a simple majority vote, 51-49.
But we're relying on someone like Reid, who I'm beginning to think is a plant. I don't know what else to say about this man, because I don't want to believe what you just said when you opened the show, but what
evidence is there to the contrary, Sandra? I mean, you didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to say it.
Well, no, but it certainly isn't that Obama is doing some Jedi mind. I don't buy that one either, though. I'll tell you that.
You gotta let me have something, okay? I mean, maybe the guy is smarter than us by a mile.
I'm not saying. No, he's smart, all right. But he may actually live by this middle ground crap, you know. And that's unfortunate for us if he is like that. I'll tell you now, because the Republicans. How many Democrats voted to give these rich fucks the tax breaks? Remember that? Remember how many? Right? Enough for Bush to get it. No one was dragging Democrats on TV complaining about the tax cuts when Bush was in power, were they? Am I fuzzy on that?
No, I think you're kind of like laser beam focused.
Yeah, well, what's happening? You know what I'm saying? I mean, I understand we have a short memory, but goddamn, it ain't that short.
I know. I mean, that's like some of the stuff we went into last night and what I mentioned at the top of the show this evening. Why am I, and this is not Bob's little moment of unabashed ego, why am I the only one who's pointing out the parallel between the passage of the Social Security Act and the passage of this stimulus bill? Why is it just me?
Yeah, no, and
I mean, there's lots of liberals out there that are like oodles smarter than me.
No, you're completely right. And those parallels can be drawn nonstop. And it's just like, I'm not understanding it, because the situation in this country, I was just reading an article about the number of suicides, economic related suicides that are going on. You know, people, God bless these people robbing banks and turning the money over to pay rent. Have you seen these reports?
Yeah, I have.
And it's, you know, I'm thinking, I'm just sort of, oh, my God, you know, are people, what did they think was going to happen, first of all? But the desperation factor just, you know, just makes me want to cry. I'm like, yo, you know what I mean? And you probably going to go away for 10, 20 years like that poor bastard in Sweetport.
But you know what? You're going to go away for 15, 30 years. But there's going to be a whole bunch of people behind those walls that are not going to, you're not going to have to be one of those that takes the soap on the rope to prison. You know, that's like, for those, I hate to say it, I want to live in an orderly world, but those are Robin Hood stories.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is that this other man in Louisiana who robbed a bank only took $100. Did you hear about this guy?
No.
Yeah, in Sweetport, he went, the homeless man who was staying at a detox shelter, his time was running out. He went to a bank, you know, said he had a gun, he didn't. The lady gave him a stack, he just took $100 off, felt guilty about that, turned himself in, you know, explained the situation, turned himself in. When it was time for him to face the judge gave that man 15 years.
Law and order must be up for election in the next couple of years.
Right, and it's just sort of like, you know, and those poor people who've been robbing banks to pay rent, no, it's the same ticket. But I opened the front page of the New York Times, and, oh, looky here, $18 billion in bonuses.
And it's, you know, it's Citi. Did you catch that Citi came out and said, well, we weren't really going to take delivery on that jet?
Oh, no, you know what, it's a joke. And the thing is that...
Or this Thane guy, this creepy Thane guy from Merrill Lynch. You've been following him some?
No.
Yeah, he's a real genius, you know, out there asking for a raise and getting his office redone, and I think that's the guy. Yeah, but these people know, they know no, there is no limit to their excesses, Sandra, and they don't mind giving us the, you know, while they're sitting there living high.
Well, no, but see, the problem with this thing in the New York Times, though, is that, and the plane, I mean, it's so blatant that the fascist government, our government, had to put pretenses. I mean, Obama apparently said, oh, it's outrageous. And he also called Citibank to stop them from getting the plane. Well, hold on. If he can call these places and do all this, what's the holdup with him telling these people to turn over that money? You understand what I'm saying? It's like, I'm starting to feel we're just being hoodwinked, and somebody can feel free to talk me down. I'm quite happy.
Well, there's some hoodwinking going on. One of my favorites, Sandra, is one of the guys who voted against the stimulus package from the Democratic side last night in the House, and that's a guy from Tennessee's 5th Congressional District, a guy named Jim Cooper.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. There were some Democrats who voted against the stimulus bill?
Oh, I've done it again, haven't I?
Listen, you know, I don't know why.
Let's see. 11 of them. Shall we go through
Yeah.
Not a single Republican voted for it, and 11 Democrats voted against it.
And what states are these? Is it around the country, or is it...
come on. You ready for this?
Give me the geography.
Okay, we got Alan Boyd, a Democrat from Florida. We got Bobby Bright, a Democrat from Alabama, and Jim Cooper, a Democrat from Tennessee. And I mean, this guy's a real Slithermeister too. He's been stabbing Democrats in the back since the Clinton administration. Brad Ellsworth, Democrat from Indiana. Parker Griffith. Now, Parker Griffith, if I was still living where I grew up in Alabama, he'd be my congressman, and he had to fight like a son of a gun to get to Congress against a real live, genuine right wing nut. He's a freshman member of Congress, and he jumped right out there and voted against it because, you know, Northwest Alabama, Huntsville, Florence, Muscle Shoals, Tuscumbia, they don't need no economic stimulus because it is a workers' paradise down there, Sandra. Then there's Paul Kanjorski, a Democrat from Pennsylvania. Frank Cradaville, a Democrat from Maryland, who just barely squeaked in and is threatened, the guy he beat said, oh, I'm coming back. There's Walt Minnick, a Democrat from Idaho, who just got in, who used as his excuse, this is a beauty. He told the Los Angeles Times today, Minnick did, he said he comes from, quote, a very conservative district in Idaho, and he said a lot of his people in his district listen to talk radio. And he said, and I'm influenced by them. But wait, we're not done. Colin Peterson, Democrat of Minnesota. Heath Shuler, Democrat of North Carolina. And finally, Gene Taylor, Democrat of Mississippi. The man who watched the Mississippi Gulf Coast drown.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know why. I just assumed for once that the Democrats were in agreement, but they're not even for this. Oh, well, you know, I have to even.
There's only one member of Congress in the entire state of Alabama who voted for the stimulus bill, and that's Arthur Davis.
And what is he? Is he out of Birmingham or something?
Yeah.
That was a good guess. Listen, you know what? Wow. Okay. Well, I really need to be talked down. This is not boding well. If we have to depend on.
Get the clown shoes off and put the rifle away, Sandra.
No. So now we have to pin our hopes on Reed.
That's what you got. I can just hear the swell of pride and determination that happening in this pregnant pause.
You know, it's just crickets. No, that's what you're hearing because that is a nightmare. And
well, I mean, is this not like some sort of twisted version of any old military photo you've ever seen? You know, Robert E. Lee handing the sword over to Ulysses Grant. Only this time, it's Grant handing it to Lee, and Lee just lost. I mean, isn't that what it is?
No, it's just bizarre. I mean, that's what I mean. It's like bizarro world, and I don't want to hear anything about this, oh, we have to, you know, work together. What do you think? You think Obama has noticed that zero Republicans voted for it. Now, if it was me, I would say, okay, I tried. Let's bring the bill back, and I would put in every goddamn thing that they took out to accommodate these bitches. Wouldn't you?
Yes. I mean, why wouldn't you?
That's what I'm saying. I'm just like, okay, we tried. It's not going to work. Let's move on. And, you know, threaten to remove Reed if he can't get it for you. I mean, the Congress is impotent. Treat it that way. I'm sorry. I'm like, if the executive branch is some huge, powerful entity now, thanks to Bush, let's put it to use for us.
Let's get us some unitarian executive power.
No, I mean, I'm saying this out of desperation. Because
no, I know you are.
Sick of the main body that is closest to us, which is the Congress, behaving this way. And if that's what they're doing, what the hell with them? This country's going down the drain. We don't have time for this. You know, if they don't know how to function as a legislative body, screw them. And let's move on to dictatorship. I mean, I don't know. Hello?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm sorry. I was trying to take care of multiple phone calls at one time. But I don't know. You know, going back to that image of George Washington saying, you know, we will pour, what was it? We will pour the heat of the House into the saucer of the Senate to cool their passions. Where are the passions? I'm at a loss. I mean, I mentioned a little bit ago, Sandra, this Jim Cooper from Tennessee guy.
Yeah.
Before he's one of those blue dogs. And before he would sign on with regard to anything in terms of the stimulus, he wanted a fiscal summit with Obama, and Obama promised it to him coming up next month, and then he turned around and voted against the stimulus package.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There's like non-ending stories of this sort of reach across the aisle, and you know the fists are staying clenched. I don't know what else to say about it. His imagery, not mine, and I'm really quite disturbed by it because not only is it sort of, I mean, I don't really think about, I don't want Congress not to function. I'm just frustrated. But it is looking more and more like as citizens, we really aren't being represented at all.
No, not even a little bit. And, you know, Marty out in California wants to know your opinion in all of this of Arnold in California.
Oh, well, no, he's, please, don't get me started on that fool. He's even more pathetic, but I blame us for voting in an actor. I mean, what is he supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, that happened. That trick was done once, and I mean, but that's history, and nobody bothers to learn it. And
I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger is dealing with Republicans who are intractable here, too. I mean, even if he wants to have a moderate stance, they're not letting him, right?
Yeah, right.
So he's threatening to lay off thousands upon thousands of state workers. But what will that do in a consumer-driven economy? You take
just took a lot of consumers out of the – right.
Right. It's just such a bad idea. I'm just sort of like – but things are desperate here. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, you're way across the country, but they're about to issue IOUs here.
And will those IOUs transfer to the power company or the phone company?
Or your mortgage
lender?
Exactly. No, it's really quite disturbing. So.
Well, that's like watching, you know, this starting late on Tuesday evening, the story of the Lupo family in Los Angeles is... I've done some reading, and it looks like Los Angeles is a mighty big place, but that has shaken up that town. Is the state generally as bothered by that?
Nope. I mean, I've seen a story about that. Maybe it's running more in the L.A. Times, but really not. I don't know. You know, people. I don't know what.
Is it just is there a certain, I guess, critical mass taking place insofar as people are they've got their own problems and they understand, you know, this is not the only family in crisis. I mean,
it's more sort of, you know, please don't kill your whole family attitude.
In terms of, yeah.
This is a story where the man killed
his
family out of work, right?
Well, the man and his wife came to the agreement to do it, yeah.
Okay, right. No, I mean, I got the impression from people I've spoken to, they seem to be more disturbed by taking out the innocent people, the kids.
Yeah. But this kind of stuff is, you know, the suicide hotlines and all of that, this is happening all across the country. Whether it's,
yeah, along with the bank robberies and all the other sort of suicide in national parks, that's another thing that's went up, they think is economically related.
And at what point in time do we get to look up Sandra and simply just say, listen, this is Republican politics coming home to roost? You know, because I argued all the way back to 2003 that we would not see the full force and effect of the hatefulness of Republican policy and Bush administration policy until those crooks were way down the road and supposedly out of reach. Isn't this that?
And how?
What have we lost in a week? Nearly 100,000 jobs in 4 days?
Yeah, no, I heard. I was reading that, and I was thinking, am I seeing these numbers right? I mean, it's just crazy. So,
and by the way, you mentioned suicides in national parks. The other there's another sickening little statistic that's on the way up, and it's heartbreaking. Apparently, even though the surge worked and everything.
Mm.
Military suicides are still trending up.
Oh, but did you hear the latest news, though? Blago's been impeached. You want to know that.
Oh, yeah, well, impeached and convicted by the Senate of Illinois. He is the ex-governor of Illinois. And his hair.
Yeah, but they're going to have to find another story. Quick, look over here.
I expect a five-day news cycle trying to figure out every last little nook and cranny of this lieutenant governor who will be taking the helm in Illinois. Because, we'll have to know all about him after all.
No, I mean, it's just sort of,
I know. Watch the birdie. Yeah, look what my hand over here is doing. Don't pay attention to the fact that I'm picking your pocket with the other one. Sure.
Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I got to go help the little ones with their homework.
They're lucky to have you helping them.
Anyway, take care.
All right. We'll see you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
This number, at least 128 soldiers were confirmed to have killed themselves in 2008, compared with 115 in 2007, 102 in 2006, and 87 in 2005. And guess what? The 2008 number is expected to go higher in 2009. Or, I'm sorry, they're looking at 15 other deaths in 2008, some of which were likely suicides. Why? Get used to this, folks. This is what you are going to witness for coming years. I'm not kidding. George is gone. Bush-merica is still here. You know, I had to run up the road to the local grocery store today. And I was walking through the aisles of the store, and, usually the Muzak in the background is, it's name that tune for 40-somethings. And it's all, 80s hits and 70s. But lo and behold, I'm cruising along the meat counter looking for something to, some little scrap of meat to throw in the pot of beans this evening. And what do I hear on the Muzak? You know what I heard. And I'm proud to be an American. Muzak style. No vocals. And it was, honest to God, it was like that Star Trek episode with, with Chekhov. He kicked and it was Khan. He put things in our ears. And it was like this hot wire going through my head. It was worse than The Lion Sleeps Tonight the other night. And I just kind of stood there for a minute and just let that nauseous wave roll over me. That, that guy sits on the National Council for the Arts. Or maybe the National Institute for the Humanities or whatever. Lee Greenwood, he really does. George Bush did that to us. It's going to be a long, long time seeing what that little pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout did to America go away. And the numbers are going to keep going up. And it's going to be working people. It's going to be poor people. It's going to be members of the military. But the pundit class that prattles away on the cable news network channels are, it's just another day at work. They're still getting their checks signed because the for-profit media is still selling Preparation H and people are out there still buying it. And therefore, we raise more corn to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs, to buy more land, to raise more corn, to feed more hogs. It's a self-perpetuating cycle. That is absolutely separate and apart from anything relating to an ordinary or actually extraordinary American life. Let's go to the phones. Oh, darn it. So we've got work to do tonight. We've got a lot to talk about. Some funny. There are some giggles along the way. And I will make sure that we get to them. We had that list of Blue Dog Democrats who sunk the Shiv in America's back. Alan Boyd, Bobby Bright, Jim Cooper, Brad Ellsworth, Parker Griffith, Paul Kanjorski, Frank Cradaville, Walt Minnick, Colin Peterson, Heath Shuler, and Gene Taylor. And they did. They put a Shiv right between America's ribs. And some of those were freshmen. Like I said, Parker Griffith was a freshman. Bobby Bright from Alabama is a freshman. And on the one hand, you might think, they don't want to piss, they had to work and they don't want to piss off the electorate and they want to come back 2 years and we need them. And so maybe that's how a freshman behaves. But I want to give you, I want to make sure that you get a chance to hear what a real Democrat sounds like. Freshman Democrat Representative Alan Grayson. Now, Alan Grayson couldn't possibly come from a redder area. Alan Grayson comes from around Orlando. Ask Juanita. Ask Peter Godbold, ask Cossack, ask Guy James just how red Florida can get. Alan Grayson is a freshman congressman, hadn't even got the shine off of his little seat there in the House chamber. And you know what? This guy knows how to stand up. Now, who's to say? He may screw up and vote yay on things that need to be voted nay on and vote nay on things that ought to be voted yay on. All kinds of disagreeable things. But you know what? While he doesn't get a pass, he damn sure has to at least get one of these. A little golf clap. Yeah. Why? Because when others were running away, Alan Grayson turned and fought. He said, and this was yesterday or the day before, Rush Limbaugh is a has-been hypocrite loser who craves attention. His right-wing lunacy sounds like Mikhail Gorbachev extolling the virtues of communism. Limbaugh actually was more lucid when he was a drug addict. If America ever did 1% of what he wanted us to do, then we'd all need painkillers. I'm thinking this guy may have a career. I don't think Alan Grayson's going to be picking up the phone and, calling Rush like Phil Gingrey did to say, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. May I touch the hem of your garment, Rush? Mm-mm. No, I got a feeling Representative Alan Grayson's not going to be afraid to take it to him. Rush Limbaugh was more lucid when he was a drug addict. A has-been hypocrite loser who craves attention. You know, Flush does crave attention. That's why he uses those same stupid hook lines that he's been using since he was Jeff Christie, a low-rent, smarmy, Herb Tarlick-style version of a DJ in Pittsburgh back in the 70s, saying things like, with talent on loan from God and with half my brain tied behind my back. Now, if you, there, you know, I've mentioned it before, there are old demo tapes of his, and you hear... you hear the same shtick that he's been doing for 40 years. And he is a has-been hypocrite loser. So, Representative Alan Grayson, thanks for showing other Democrats how to act like Democrats, and you only a member of the Congress for not even quite a month yet. You've got to be proud of that. But yeah, there are some fun things tonight, and there is some really creepy unfun stuff. We should probably do the creepy unfun stuff first. No. Let's do the good news. Let's wander into a little bit of good news. Because there was a bill signed today, and this thing got past the Senate. I guess Mitch McConnell and John Kyle and Cornyn and the rest of those creepy right wingers. They've decided they've got a strategy. They're going to declare what they will and will not let through the Senate. And for some reason or another, they let the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Restoration Act through. It was the first major piece of legislation today that Barack Obama has yet signed. His words are noteworthy.
Everybody, please have a seat. Well, this is a wonderful day. First of all, it is fitting that the very first bill that I signed, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Restoration Act, that it is upholding one of this nation's founding principles, that we are all created equal, and each deserve a chance to pursue our own version of happiness. It's also fitting that we're joined today by the woman after whom this bill is named, someone who Michelle and I have had the privilege to get to know ourselves. And it is fitting that we are joined this morning by the first woman speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm about to... Okay, let's do some background. We all know who Lilly Ledbetter is, right? Lilly Ledbetter worked for, I believe, Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company in, of all places, Alabama. And she worked for literally years, perhaps decades, being underpaid for the same job that men around her were being paid to do. She eventually found out that she had been ripped off all those years, and she sued, and she won. And was awarded damages against her former employer for this pay inequity. The company, however, appealed. And they appealed, and they appealed, all the way to the United States Supreme Court, all the way to Alito, all the way to Roberts, all the way to Slappy Thomas, all the way to Fat Tony Scalia and Tony Kennedy. And in a piece of pseudo-legal reasoning that is scarcely cognizable or comprehensible, the Supreme Court of the United States, i.e. those five right-wing, the judicially activist maggots, ruled that Lilly Ledbetter had no right to sue her employer. That, in fact, as a matter of law, she, and I'm not making this up, go read it, this is what it says, that she had to know that she was being discriminated against, even though she had no way of knowing. And that she was charged with knowing everything that was happening to her within a matter of weeks, perhaps a 2-year statute of limitations, from when it happened, and the fact that she didn't file until she found out about it rendered her judgment moot. Didn't count. Didn't matter. Didn't happen. In other words, giving just a sweetheart deal to corporate America. If you recall, she spoke at the Democratic National Convention in Denver this past summer. She sounds like a real sweet lady. She's got that beautiful Alabama accent. And the Lilly Ledbetter Act has been a passionate issue brought forth by the Democratic Congress. This one they got done. I honest to God don't know how. You know, there's an old saying out there. Maybe you've heard it. It says, may you be involved in a lawsuit in which you are convinced that you are right. There's a reason that that's not, that is a curse instead of a blessing. May you be involved in a lawsuit in which you are convinced that you are right. Because these things stretch on for years, and sometimes generations. If you've ever read Charles Dickens' Bleak House, and if you have, you have my congratulations. You are a hearty and stalwart soul, for Charles Dickens was paid by the word. You know that these, what was the case in Bleak? Jarndyce versus Jarndyce. And it literally consumed generations. But this had some elements of that. It ate portions of Lilly Ledbetter's family alive. Her poor husband did not live to see the day that this act was passed. Lilly Ledbetter has a law named after her, but there is this thing called the Constitution, and it has a provision in it that says there shall be no ex post facto laws, no laws made after the fact, and no bills of attainder. It doesn't just apply to criminal law. Applies to civil remedies as well. And Lilly Ledbetter, well, we'll go back to the audio, but just understand, when you hear all the hooting and the hollering, understand that unless some private foundation has made up the shortfall, Lilly Ledbetter still got the short end of the stick. When Congress fixed what was done to her, they didn't fix what was done to her. She still got robbed by her employer. So bear that in mind.
It's appropriate that this is the first bill we do together. We could not have done it without her. Madam Speaker, thank you for your extraordinary work. And to all the sponsors and members of Congress and leadership who helped to make this day possible. Now, Lilly Ledbetter did not set out to be a trailblazer or a household name. She was just a good, hard worker who did her job, and she did it well for nearly two decades before discovering that for years she was paid less than her male colleagues for doing the very same work.
Told you.
Over the course of her career, she lost more than $200,000 in salary and even more in pension and Social Security benefits, losses that she still feels today.
Told you.
Now, Lilly could have accepted her lot and moved on. She could have decided that it wasn't worth the hassle and the harassment that would inevitably come with speaking up for what she deserved.
May you be involved in a lawsuit in which you're sure you're right.
But instead, she decided that there was a principle at stake, something worth fighting for. So she set out on a journey that would take more than 10 years, take her all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and lead to this day and this bill, which will help others get the justice that she was denied. Because while this bill bears her name, Lilly knows that this story isn't just about her.
Now, time out. You know, this isn't like when we used to do sound bites of Dim Leader, sitting there mangling the language and talking about, find some onions and pluck them, whatever you do. This isn't that. This is erudite and eloquent. But this is also exemplary. I'm going to back this up just a hair, and I want you to listen again, if you don't mind, about to the way that President, and you know, I got to tell you, it's got a sweet ring to it. President Obama. Listen to the way that President Obama describes this scenario.
Dollars in salary, and even more in pension and Social Security benefits, losses that she still feels today. Now, Lilly could have accepted her lot and moved on. She could have decided that it wasn't worth the hassle and the harassment that would inevitably come with speaking up for what she deserved. But instead, she decided that there was a principle at stake, something worth fighting for. So she set out on a journey that would take more than 10 years, take her all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and lead to this day and this bill, which will help others get the justice that she was denied. Because while this bill bears her name, Lilly knows that this story isn't just about her. It's the story of women across this country still earning just 78 cents for every dollar men earn. Women of color even less. Which means that today, in the year 2009, countless women are still losing thousands of dollars in salary, income, and retirement savings over the course of a lifetime. Now, equal pay is by no means just a women's issue. It's a family issue. It's about parents who find themselves with less money for tuition and child care, couples who wind up with less to retire on, households where one breadwinner is paid less than she deserves. That's the difference between affording the mortgage or not.
The Lupo family kind of proves that, don't they? But what I wanted you to note, and I'm going to the phone just here in about 10 seconds, I wanted you to note that President Obama, and it does sound good, sounds real good, did not note, you know, that she, why did she lose at the Supreme Court, President Obama? You've got a bully pulpit. Use it. Point out, I mean, come on, let's take their language and use it against them. Let's talk about the activist judges on the Supreme Court of the United States of America who despise and loathe and do everything that they can to demean and diminish the lives of working America. I know it's your first bill signing and everything, but it's time, you know, it might be time to be working that big stick a little bit. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is on the line with us. Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm pulling over here. I'm driving back from Charleston, if you hear that rumble.
Okay.
Okay. I don't want to lose you. I haven't heard that. Well, that was a good clip, you know. And, think of the difference. Think of what you just heard.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, my gosh, you know.
Every word got pronounced, Wayne.
Huh?
Every word got pronounced.
Exactly. I mean, the man can actually speak intelligently, and he doesn't make up words and things like that. And what he's saying is absolutely right. I mean, that's a very good argument. You know, the Supreme Court now, isn't it the Republicans that are so against activist judges?
Yes.
Yes, I kind of thought that's what it was. I couldn't.
Yeah, your memory is not playing tricks on you. They're the ones.
Okay. Well, you know, that's another thing to consider, you know, and, you know, dealing with what I deal with and, you know, union issues and workers' issues and stuff like that, I'm always of the mind that I'm never going to get everything I want. And, you know, I knew that when we campaigned for this guy to be president. But I'm going to tell you what, pal, this is a million times better than what we had. This guy is, well, I'm very happy with him. Do I agree with everything? No. You know, do I disagree with some of the things? Yes. But it beats the hell out of what we had, you know. And
does.
It's thrilling. It's thrilling. Do you know who the biggest opposition to this bill was?
Who?
The Chamber of Commerce.
Well, of course.
And, you know, how many the president of the Beckley-Raleigh County Chamber of Commerce is a woman. Now, there's a poor woman that has to swallow real hard and continue in her job because, you know, without her job, well, she wouldn't eat as often and things like that. But these people opposed it. The Chamber of Commerce. And what are all these people, you know, what's the Chamber of Commerce made of? Mostly men, but they all have wives. So are their wives in agreement with them that women are worth less than men?
Now, see, that's how you frame an issue, Wayne.
Yes.
And maybe that's why this piece of legislation passed. You know, this was the first major bill signing that Obama had. It was the second bill signing overall. His first bill signing fixed the salary of the Interior Secretary. But it was the first major bill. Do you know how, and what is this? This is the 29th of January. You know how long it was before George Bush signed a bill?
I don't have the
in 2001. He signed his first bill on February the 16th, 2001. Care to guess what that bill was? I mean, it was some real groundbreaking legislation.
Some outlawing some kind of human rights, I'm sure.
No, it was a resolution honoring Ronald Reagan's 90th birthday.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that really paints a picture of the difference here. I mean, this is an attempt to get something done. And like you, I don't expect to agree with him, and I'm in disagreement with him right now of this, over this business of, playing footsie with the right wing and then letting them, you know, stick the shiv to you. You know, over the,
I'm a little confused over that too, and then I think, well, maybe he's doing all this so that, you know, a little bit down the road he could say, wait a minute, I tried, and I got a knife stuck in my back. So therefore, I realize we don't need you. You know, we have enough of a majority, and we will have enough Republicans in the Senate that are sensible and decent people to get the legislation passed that we need. And hopefully it will embolden Harry Reid, which that's a real stretch, you know.
And if I recall correctly, embolden, that's an old Serbian word, right?
That's an old Serbian word, yes it is. It means to have balls.
Yes.
Which Harry doesn't have.
Right.
And, you know, and he's, have you seen any of his campaign thing? What's he up, 2010?
Yeah.
You know, he wants to pretend like he's give 'em hell, Harry. Give me a break.
give me a break. And see, that's the before you called in, I had that clip from South Carolina's Jim Demented, you know, right winger extraordinaire.
Yes, yes.
Saying that he wouldn't be surprised if not a single Republican senator voted for the stimulus package. Well, if that's the case, then how does it get past the filibuster?
Right.
Doesn't that mean the stimulus runs a real risk of dying in the Senate, Wayne?
That's what that means, yes. And that's where Harry Reid has to, you know, I think the stimulus will pass in the Senate because of people like Olivia Snowe and
Susan Collins.
Susan, right. You know, I think we'll carry there. But, you know what? What I said before and why I emphasize that, you know, Harry Reid has to have the guts to stand up and impose the nuclear option, which is, you know, has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. It's just changing the Senate rules where a bill can be passed by a simple majority. Because, you know, we have to remember all of our, I don't know, where's Franken at? You know, has Coleman dropped his suit?
No, he hadn't dropped the suit yet, but it's getting real silly. Coleman put, you're going to love this. Coleman's lawyer put a witness on the stand, I think yesterday, if I read the report from Brad blog correctly. He put his own witness, okay? This wasn't cross-examination. This wasn't one of Franken's witnesses. This was one of Coleman's own witnesses. And under his own examination, the guy confessed that he didn't sign his own ballot. That his girlfriend filled it out for him. So that's kind of where Coleman is.
Tried to declare him a hostile witness.
or a really stupid one.
Yes, exactly.
With an even dumber petitioner.
They are funny, aren't they?
I mean, I'd just love to have been.
They provide some good laughs.
So, you know, we're going to have 59, but I got.
Yeah, but I mean, my whole point is that doesn't mean we could count on all those people.
Precisely.
You know, we can't count on, can we count on, you know, we have 58 senators. How many co-signers to the Employees Free Choice Act do we have?
44, 47. 42,
47? 47.
Let me guess, so. Ben Nelson of Nebraska ain't one of them.
No, he ain't. No, he ain't.
And see, he's got that D behind his name. But it's kind of like
probably he's running in a, you know, where similar to West Virginia, you know, if you have a D, you have a better chance of being elected. That doesn't mean you're a Democrat.
Well, you know, Ben Nelson being a Democrat reminds me of putting an old paper towel tube on. Did I lose you?
No.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say Ben Nelson being a Democrat reminds me of taking an old cardboard paper towel tube and putting it on a cow's nose and calling it a rhinoceros.
Yeah, or a unicorn.
Right. mm-hmm. It's still not one.
No, still not.
And that's, you know, it's almost inconceivable to imagine Harry Reid standing up to Republicans, but if he can't even get Ben Nelson to sign on to something like this, how in the hell are we going to get employee free choice or the stimulus bill or anything else? Health care? I gotta see something that I need to see something, Wayne, and I know you do too. Something in the way of giving me some sense of faith that they're actually going to do something with the rather profound majority that we've given them.
Well, and I'm telling you the answer to that. Change the Senate rules, simple majority. You know, you don't like it, you could be mad at us, you could cry. It'll give Rush Limbaugh something to talk about for months or years, or until him and Palin run for president and vice president in 2012 or whatever. But who cares? Like I said, these are extraordinary times, and it calls for extraordinary measures. And if the Democrats play their cards right and do this and get things passed and change people's lives and turn this economy around, we won't have to be worry about the Republicans being in control for a very, very, very long time. And, you know,
so this is
people that have the guts to do it.
Yeah, this is their last gasp.
Yes, it is.
At least I hope it is.
They are gasping. I certainly do, too, you know. But what are we going to do? We're, you know, hope and pray. And you know, I'm in a – sometimes I almost wished I lived somewhere else as far as the Employee Free Choice Act goes, because both of our senators are co-sponsors.
Right.
And, you know, that's where the fight lies, and it's kind of – and, you know, you try to contact senators in other states, and, you know, you get back a nice email where – they don't listen to you because you don't live in their state, you know, and which that's rather sad, too. But that's
because they get paid a national federal salary.
Yes, they do. They work for all the people. Well,
exactly. But bear in mind, you know, we've got two co-sponsors of Employee Free Choice in West Virginia, Wayne. But one of those two co-sponsors, if Harry even mutters about threatening the filibuster, Robert Byrd will run off and form a coalition with any mugwump Republican he can find to save the damn filibuster.
That's true, too.
So you've got plenty of work to do. I've got plenty of work to do. And that is to make him understand that, you know, that these are extraordinary times and they do call for extraordinary measures.
Well, and how strong is Rockefeller? I mean, you know, he's been known to fold like a deck of cards or a house of cards also. No. I guess you're right there. I better start hammering them. But.
Yeah, take nothing for granted on this one, man.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, come on. Who are we? What am I telling you? Who are we dealing with?
We both know. No. But anyway. I'm, you know, like I say, I'm on the road, so I can't listen to the show. And unfortunately, if I was home, I couldn't listen either, because I believe I lost a hard drive. In my very unprofessional opinion, that's what I think. So, the magic disc didn't work.
Oh, dear. Well, we will be correcting that. I'll make sure that your computer guy gets over there this weekend.
That would be very nice. There's a football game on Sunday, you know, if he wanted to drop by.
Hey, that could work.
And get it done. And then, you know, I mean, what's the game start? 11:30 or something?
Yeah, midnight Pittsburgh time or something like that.
I mean, pregame starts at 7 a.m. But
who's got the coverage? Is it Fox again?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
Yeah, because remember, was it last year or the year before that it was some sort of sickening Fox News political? Well, no, it was last year, because it was a sickening Fox News political orgy.
Who does Phil Simms work for?
I thought he was CBS.
Okay, I don't know.
I could be wrong.
I hope he's not there. I told you, I called my, after one of the Steeler games in Simms, Simms hates the Steelers. He really hates the Steelers. And I called up my buddy in Pittsburgh, and he wasn't there after a game. I guess he went out, and I left my, I left him a message, and I said, before I die, I hope I have the opportunity to slap Phil Simms right in the mouth.
He's on the list.
Yes, he is on the list. So.
Well, I'm told in the chat room it's NBC, so there's at least a little sigh of relief to be breathed there.
Okay, well, very good. Very good.
Because, you know...
Go ahead.
No, you please.
Well, I was going to say I'm going to head up the road, but I want to hear what you...
Well, no, I was simply going to say that the way you feel about Phil Simms is how I feel about any game called by Brent Musburger on ABC. And
yeah, that's a close. That's close.
I mean, there's loathsome, and then there's gastrointestinal distress inducing.
Right. Yeah, and that's dangerous, you know.
Exactly. Well, drive careful going home, man.
I surely will, pal. Hello to everybody out there in internet radio land.
All right.
I'll be talking to you.
All right. Take care, Wayne.
Okay, pal.
Bye. That's the boss, man. That's Wayne on his way back home to Raleigh County. Steelers fan extraordinaire. Did I see that the line is like down to 6.5 or so? I think this could be a very, very interesting Super Bowl. And I remain, I'm the same way Wayne is. Yeah, I want the Steelers. I mean, I know, underdogs and all of that stuff with the Cardinals, but no. I want the Steelers. I get the notion reading Bart Kopp, because Bart Kopp is another sports fan. I get the notion reading Bart Kopp that he's thinking that somehow or another the Cardinals have a shot. He seems to think Kurt Warner, the fundamentalist, is going to somehow just pick apart the Steelers' secondary. Huh? What? And he might. I mean, given, but I wouldn't credit it so much to Kurt Warner as I would to Larry Fitzgerald and the other Pro Bowl wideout there at Arizona. So that's the first hour of the program and a little bit more. I'm still, am I wrong? Am I just in this dark and creepy place where I want to see some fighting back just for the sake of, am I being cantankerous for the sake of being cantankerous? That is not my intent. But America needs to start, look. Barack Obama has a bully pulpit. And allied against him are the cable networks and the mainstream for-profit media, they all being the for-profit media. And for every word he says, it's almost like liberal talk radio. For every word he says, there will be 1,000 words said contrary. He has got to use this bully pulpit to its best effect. And in discussing the Lilly Ledbetter case, America would have done well to be reminded that it was a bunch of activist right-wingers on the Supreme Court who overturned that decision and said that Lilly Ledbetter was not entitled to equal pay. That's just wrong. I don't care if you're working in Alabama, Maine, or California. It's just wrong. And to this day, as I noted, Lilly Ledbetter has not been fully and fairly compensated for what was stolen from her. She has a bill, a law named after her. But she does not have... She does not have what she deserved in the first place. And she doesn't have it because of right-wing activist judges. This is the law, or this is the world we live in, and this is what we face in attempting to fight back. So, you know how this works. This is the horn. We do conversation radio. That's what we're good at. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Dial it up. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
the railroad men got a girl on every line. They toot on the whistle as the train rolls by. I'll come up to see you sometime. There's more good women gone wrong. A man was the cause of it all. A man will deceive you and run your poor soul behind you. He'll laugh when you fall. Nice young preacher will come to your home, act just as nice as can be, and the next thing you know, your woman's gone wrong, and he'll tell you salvation is free. There's more good women gone wrong. A man was the cause of it all. A man will deceive you and ruin your poor soul behind you. A handsome young lawyer will plead for your case, take money to save your life, and while you're in prison serving your term, he's courting your good-looking wife. There's more good women gone wrong. A man was the cause of it all. A man will deceive you and ruin your poor soul. Behind you he'll laugh when you fall. The cause of it all. A man will deceive you and ruin your poor soul. Behind you, he'll laugh when you fall.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. More job cuts in the United States were in the headlines for most of the day on Wednesday as the United Nations released a report that projected a global loss of 51 million jobs by the end of the year. Jesse Russell reports.
The International Labor Organization, an agency within the United Nations, projected a worst-case scenario this week that 2009 could end with 51 million jobs lost globally. If numbers push that high, the year will end with a global unemployment rate of 7.1%. That's up from 5.7% just 2 years ago. The study comes as Wednesday saw yet another wave of job cuts in the United States. Late last year, Starbucks announced plans to close 600 stores, and yesterday, the coffee maker added 300 more to that list, with 200 of those closures coming in the United States. 6,700 more jobs will be lost as a result of the company's earnings falling by 69% in the fourth quarter. Starbucks also announced this week it would limit making decaf coffee in the afternoon. Boeing announced plans to make deeper cuts to its workforce, adding an additional 5,500 jobs to the already announced 4,500. Also slashing jobs is the largest publicly traded insurance company, Allstate. The firm will slash 1,000 jobs. Internet company AOL will be letting go of 700 jobs by the end of March and plans to eliminate merit pay increases.
As SEIU International takes control of UnitedHealthcare Workers West in a trusteeship, the big California local is responding by trying to leave SEIU to form a new national union. UHW President Sal Roselli.
About 100 of our elected leaders through teleconference between Los Angeles, California, and Oakland, California, collectively decided to resign our membership in the Service Employees International Union.
The new union is called the National Union of Healthcare Workers. UHW nurse Angela Glasper announced the founding of the new union during a press conference by UHW leaders.
All workers deserve to be a part of the union. that workers control, that the workers control, not the top down, not the leaders in Washington, D.C. So today we are proud and excited to announce that we have founded the National Union of Healthcare Workers.
SEIU International is using trusteeship to take control of UHW, alleging financial malpractice and the undermining of democracy within SEIU. The financial misconduct cited involved moving UHW funds into a new account in order to use that money in a battle with SEIU International. Wynn's Labor News is now available right on your cell phone. Just dial 425-527-7001. Get your Wynn Labor News on your cell phone at 425-527-7001. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
At almost 20 minutes past the hour, Bob Kincaid, who cannot find the top of the hour on a clock, gets the second hour of the program started. But, you know, that's all right. That's all right. We'll be just fine. And, yeah, breaking news. The Illinois Senate did, in fact, vote to oust both Rod Blagojevich and his heir from the Illinois governor's office. In addition, they imposed the Illinois political death penalty, stating that he can never again hold political office in the state of Illinois. And you know what? What is it? And this is a significant question, and it is a question sincerely asked. What is it about the Illinois legislature? What's the Illinois legislature got that the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives and Senate of the United States don't? You realize, of course, and this is in no way a defense of Rod Blagojevich, no. But you do realize that George Bush did tons more evil, illegal stuff than Rod Blagojevich ever even dreamed of. And yet he's cooling his heels, not in a cell somewhere or standing in a dock at The Hague or even answering a charge of impeachment in the Senate of the United States. No, he didn't do any of that. He's sitting back in the former presidential Barca lounger on a cul-de-sac in Dallas waiting for the Super Bowl. Got his pretzels out. Barney is standing guard. He's got his, he's probably wearing Barca loungers with a, you know, with the flip over armrest where he can hide a six pack of, what's the cheapest beer you can imagine? From Laura, and surreptitiously suck it down until he chokes on another pretzel and passes out and has to be resuscitated by Barney. Rod Blagojevich, impeached and removed from office. George W. Bush, war criminal, mass murderer, violator of the most sacred elements of the Constitution, free man. Now, if you can sort that out, I welcome you to, because I can't. Maybe if you can explain that, I want the phone call, because, again, I can't. Not even a little bit. I can't begin to explain that. And, oh dear, here we go again. Sandra mentioned this chain of events, and here's this breaking story. From Bay City, Michigan, to Los Angeles, California, to suburban Columbus, Ohio. Police in Whitehall, east of Columbus, have responded to a call yesterday, where they found the bodies of 51-year-old Mark Meeks, his 40-year-old wife Jennifer Dallas Meeks, and 5-year-old Jimmy and 8-year-old Abigail, dead. Meeks apparently also left a suicide note. The contents have not been released. The police are not saying that finances or a job loss had anything to do with the murder-suicide. Mr. Meeks was apparently still a current employee. Meeks's brother said the family was struggling to come to terms with the possibility that his older brother might have killed his family. Baby brother Mike Meeks said they were just great people and they seemed to be an extremely close family. I like to say they were so close they were mushy. They showed affection toward each other and their kids. And there was no indication of anything wrong. But see, that is, as I said, Bushmerica. And Bushmerica is still with us. It isn't, and you know what? I will defer. I don't know. I don't even know if I can channel him tonight. I don't know if he's listening. I will defer to Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner on this. But as far to inside my tiny mind, that line in the piece of journalism that says there was no indication that there was of anything like this coming and that there was no clue anything was amiss. See, in Bushmerica, there doesn't have to be anything wrong with you. You, your spouse, and your children may all be okay. But Bushmerica is not okay. Bushmerica is a sick place that the Republican Party wants to get sicker. Bushmerica is a place where even if you've still got your job, you and your spouse, and nothing seems amiss, the pressures that Republican policies have brought to bear on working folks all over this once great nation can be sufficient to destroy even the healthiest mind and the sturdiest, most steadfast heart. Because Bushmerica does that. Bushmerica is a predatory place. Bushmerica is a place that eats up American families and chews them up and spits out the particles and specks and chunks of bone and gristle and flesh and sinew. That is the Bushmerica of Ohio Congressman John Boehner, of Arizona Senator John Kyle, of South Carolina Senator Jim Demented. That is the sick and twisted place that for 8 years out of the past eight, and for 20 years out of the last 28, so-called conservatives and family values Republicans have striven day in and day out to create. Hey, welcome to the program.
I couldn't have said it any better.
Well, hey, horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, did I conjure you?
I had this little itching behind my ear, and I figured I better call. Actually, I had a few moments to step back here, and I was listening to you, and you've got it. You pinned it. Once you have broken down society, you have broken down every single thing that we have that blocks us from acting the way that we do. You lose any sense of responsibility, and then you start thinking, okay, it's okay. I can take my kids with me. Everything will be fine. Everything is falling apart now. Maybe I won't lose my job, but then maybe I will. And I'm 50 years old. Where am I going to get a job? Am I going to be a greeter at Walmart? What am I going to do? There are no jobs. 50,000 people, 100,000 people, 1 million people have lost jobs. Where am I going to find a job? An old man, because that's the way you think when you get to that point. And then you start to lose it and say, I cannot leave them in this hell. I cannot leave them with this mess I'm about to make. I must take them with me.
And when that thought process starts, Rick,
who's
there to stop it? Because we've destroyed that. Not we, but the Republicans and the loyal Bushies and the family values voters and the Bush voters in general. They have destroyed any infrastructure that might be able to stop it. And what's more, because this is an upside-down, topsy-turvy, utterly chaotic world, doesn't it, inside the mind of the person who has gotten there, it also seems rational, doesn't it?
Well, of course it seems rational. Not only that, believe it or not, when a person has made the decision, and a man is more likely to kill himself than a woman, a woman's more likely to attempt, a man's more likely to actually do it. And a man 50 and above is more likely than anybody except a teenager. So all these things mount together. It not only seems rational, it starts to feel okay. They become happy again. They think, okay, I am controlling my life again. Life is out of control. And we don't know what political party he was a part of. Maybe it finally sunk in one day. Every thought I've ever had, every conservative ideal I've ever believed in is garbage. What do I have left? I could listen to Rush Limbaugh, but he's going to feed me the same garbage. If the liberals are so wrong, how can I go to them? What's left? Mental health services are gone. I can get pastoral counseling. They'll tell me to pray. But I can feel good by making the decision on what I'm about to do. Because as perverted as it is, he's still taking care of his family.
Or at least has managed to rationalize it that way.
Yes. That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Yeah. No, I do. And, well, I mentioned I took your name in vain two nights ago as well, talking about Mr. Schur up in Michigan. And the fact that the Michigan Department, the Bay County, I guess it is, or whatever county it is, Department on Aging said that they reach 2,000 to 3,000 out of their population of 20,000 senior citizens. And I think what I said at that time, Rick, was, we can ask Rick Goodner what an adult protective services worker on the state payroll makes for dealing with these horrors.
$15,000.
$15,000
a year.
And it's going to cost what to go and get the social work degree to get that $15,000 a year job?
Oh, $80,000 to $100,000.
This is not a recipe for success, Rick Goodner.
No, but see, if you said it that way, then you have less social workers. If you have less social workers, who do you have who's going to stand up and say, look, guys, this ain't right?
Oh, so less social workers means less people talking about the problem, and if we just don't talk about the problem, we don't have a problem, and America is great again, right?
And it's even better than that, because before a social worker will talk about a problem, they have a suggestion for a solution. You don't have the social workers, you don't have to worry about solutions. If you don't have to worry about solutions, you don't have to feel any guilt.
And you don't have to spend the money that the solutions cost.
Absolutely. It all comes back to that. You know, it's like Rush Limbaugh says over and over and over, you know, social workers are the prostitutes of society. Well, they're very badly paid ones.
How do you, I don't want to get personal or anything. How do you get through a day, Rick? This is your world, not mine, brother.
Because sometimes you're sitting in your office and a lady walks in with tears in her eyes and said, I've just got diagnosed with cancer. And 20 minutes later, she walks out of your office smiling.
If you can,
that's what gets you through the day.
If you can do that, Rick Goodner, I tell you what, the only thing you're lacking is Oprah for a friend, because you'd have Dr. Phil just beat all the thunder.
It's not that hard. All you do is just give people the most important thing in the world, hope. Because when they come through my door, they're hopeless. When they walk out of any social worker's door, there's hope. Because there's always hope. Even to the last moment. It's like she said, all I want to do, and this was maybe 40 minutes ago, all I want to do is die. And I said, okay, crawl under your bed. Go ahead. And they can drag you back out. Or grab a hold of life and force your body, force the disease back, and live every single bit of it as fast and as well and as good as you can. Your choice.
I like your version.
As she walked out, she says, I'm not crawling under any bed. Got an appointment Monday. It'll be okay. I mean, as well as you can be with cancer.
Yeah.
But remember, Patty, I had her laughing within 6 hours of dying. So you have to keep people's spirits up.
Exit smiling.
There are some ways to take care of this, and the way to do it is, number one, we have to constantly keep slamming it back in their face, because I listened to right-wing stuff. I really did. I actually heard the inauguration with Rush Limbaugh narrating it.
Dear Lord, you are a far stronger man than I am.
But they're saying over and over, I mean, you know, it was Carter who caused all of this with Clinton's help. But we've got to keep going out there. We've got to keep hitting them back in the face and say, look, we would not be in this mess if it wasn't for you. You have to point the finger. You have to say, this is your fault. What's your solution? You don't have one? I have one. Let's get to work on that.
Yeah, so does that go back to my five little words? Sit down and shut up?
Well, that's pretty good. That gets us started. Amen. If people, if we would just constantly keep hammering it back, they have this wonderful denial. Okay. And then that brings us back to the other problem. One of the problems of convincing someone that their ideology has been wrong all this time is that they do get despondent. So you've got to be able to be there with the liberal thought process. You have to be able to give them something back so that they can grab a hold of it. Because you cannot take away something. You cannot completely destroy this belief system they've had for 20 or 30 years without being able to replace it. Use any word you want, progressive, the new form of thinking. I just say liberal. But give something back to them that they can hang on to. They've just been lied to for too many years, and now they have trouble with accepting the fact. I'm afraid, my friend, to tell you that we're probably going to have a lot more suicides. You know, we've talked before, 60% of my patients are free. That has went up to 80% now.
God almighty.
The people who are losing jobs have no money.
And it could in a way, and this is going to sound very crass, and I do not intend it to be that way.
Huh.
It is harder for someone who has had something to have nothing than for someone who has nothing to keep having it.
You know what my father told me? That's a very good point, and I want to bring that home, something my father told me. He said, you know, he used to work, he was very progressive in a time that wasn't, and he worked within the black community quite a bit. We went to black churches and stuff. He was a Pentecostal. But
happens to the best of us.
He said, yeah, I know. He said, you know, the blacks didn't have it quite as bad as the whites during the Depression. Only because they didn't have as far to fall. Because of racism, we've already pushed them to the limit. We, the white people, we put ourselves above them. So when Hoover's Depression, his words, not mine, came about, we fell further and we got more despondent. We started beating our family. We left our families. We got on trains. We rode away. We ran away. But the black community stayed together and stayed strong because they didn't fall as far. Made sense to me. Don't know how true it is, but that was Daddy's words. But now I think we're all going to fall very far.
And what is it possible, Rick, to build that structure or to have something along the can we catch each other?
Yes, we can catch each other. But first of all, we have to realize that we are in this together, and we didn't cause it. And that needs to be stated purely straight out as fast as we can. And we need to pull our family together. It's okay. I've done it. I've got family coming in this weekend because I made a phone call in the last weekend, especially to the big Republicans who had tons of money, and I know that they've lost quite a bit now, to my family members, and I said, look, I'm here. You're not alone. I don't know what you've been thinking. I know you've had some difficulty, but I'm here. And I'm not just talking emotional support. You let me know. I'm here. So I did this with my entire family, and all of a sudden, they're descending upon me this weekend. But you build the structure. The structure is there. You can do it within your church.
Is that part of the structure that we've built here? And I'm not fishing.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly the structure we've built here. Because if I fall, like I did when my poor wife went, y'all were there. Y'all held me up when I couldn't stand. You did. And we can do it for each other in this hard time, too. And we'll get past it. Because being liberal, as we are, we have never extended ourselves as far as conservatives did. Because conservatives have had this fake mantra put through their brains, buy, 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 loan, 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 build, build, build. down and help.
Yeah, I get real geeky about this time of year, Rick. I think I mentioned on the show. I start thinking about where the corn and the tomatoes and the squash are going to go.
I keep waiting for my seed catalog to come in.
garden porn, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, I never thought of it that way.
Man, look at those tomatoes.
There's nothing better than sitting in front of a crackling fireplace and looking at a seed catalog. God, I'm so
horny. Yeah, well, you know you've gone full on pathetic when you say, look at those melons, and there's nothing prurient about it.
Oh, you know, that you got a point there. And they usually have great looking melons in those pages.
Yeah, I caused a little bit of a stir up here a couple of years ago. I had a buddy of mine down in Alabama send me some seed for yellow watermelons. I'm sure you've seen them down there in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're kind of a rarity up this way. And I grew some yellow watermelons and didn't cut them open. And what in the hell is that? It was worth it.
That's really funny. You know what we use watermelons here for?
What's that?
Back when, I'm sorry, you need to call?
No. What is that?
Okay. Back when we were coming into Texas, my kin and other people along the border within Texas, Nacogdoches, around about there, around the Sabine, they planted watermelon plants. And then as you came through, you bought watermelon to go west with. You had all the water you needed for your family, for you, and for your horses and cows. That's why watermelons are all over Texas, because everybody spit the seeds along the road. Anybody who got here in the last 100 years got here on watermelon.
I tell you, there's worse ways to get. Well, it's like scooping out the heart of a cactus, you know, because it's water.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do that, too, but, there's nothing better about it. Have you ever eaten cactus?
Oh, yeah. Nopalitos?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love them.
You know, the prickly pear, the fruit, it's just like watermelon.
Does it? Now, see, I didn't know that.
Yep, the fruit. You go get them when they're good and purple. Oh, it tastes just like watermelon.
You know, I don't think they make them this far north.
No, it'll leave your mouth purple, and the seeds are real, real small and hard, but, it's watermelon. It is so good.
Yeah, we just
have to send you some up.
We wait for the pawpaws to ripen.
Yeah, well, those would be good. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, I'm glad you responded when I conjured you, Rick, because when I go into these issues as to, you know, the workings of the human mind and the attemptings to work of the human heart under dire circumstances such as what America faces now, I realize that I've wandered out of any area of whatever expertise I may possess, and I appreciate it when I can get a little amen from the Rick Goodner corner.
Well, you got it in you. It's there. You can pick up the human soul. I have no doubt about that. The day I first met you, so that's not ever an issue. We'll just have to keep going. Remember, you've got family. Remember, you've got the horn. Remember, you've got each other. Remember, you've got the church. Remember, you've got the atheist core. Whatever you want, don't get despondent. We're not going to fall as hard as the conservatives are. And we're going to have to pick those fools up, too, because they're too dumb to do it for themselves.
Can't we just leave them by the side of the road with the watermelon seeds? Or will they sprout again eventually?
That's fine as long as they're still alive.
I'm sorry. I'm mean, I reckon. But
you're wonderful. Do you know how mean I get on Saturdays?
Well, you're not exactly a shrinking violet. But it reminds me, our buddy Marty just shot me a link to an editorial cartoon, and it shows. It shows the back of Uncle Sam walking toward a bathtub with this rotten little brat in his right hand. And it's a cartoon by Danziger. And it says, The Decline of the Right, a series. The size of conservative theorist Grover Norquist's influence is now so small that it may be drowned in the bathtub. And man, I don't know that I've ever seen such a. And granted, I'm talking about a cartoon on the radio, so we've already gone well into dancing about architecture. But I don't know that I've ever seen such a disturbing cartoon. You know, because whether it's Grover Norquist represented or what, throwing this little hateful creature that's baby sized into a bathtub, it kind of.
Yeah.
But.
Norquist. That's what he wanted done of our government. He wanted it small enough that he could drown it in a bathtub.
And by extension, that's what he wanted to done with the political input and the social input of every single working person in this country who wasn't on board with his hateful right-wing ideology.
And he didn't even care if they're on board or not. It's the amount of money they have. He is a worshiper of people who are extraordinarily rich. That's all they care about. If you're of a certain class, you have worth. If you're not of that class, we can drown you in a bathtub.
It's about the size of it, isn't it?
For people who have worked their lives, union people who got every single thing that the working man has now that they hold so cherishedly close to them, that's why they can turn around and say, well, get rid of the unions. I got what I want. They don't seem to realize that when the unions are gone, they're going to lose everything they have. Everything. There's no.
Yeah, and even those guys that are so proud of not being in the union, they're getting what they're getting because union wages exist. If union
wages.
That's
what I mean.
Right.
If it's gone, they have nothing. Once all the auto worker unions are gone, then these people in the South who are making this money at Honda and everything are going to make nothing. There'll be no competition. They will not make any money at all. It will all disappear. The ideal is get rid of collective bargaining. We, the owners of the companies, can then choose what we're going to make you live on. And it ain't going to be nothing. That's a triple negative, isn't it? Oh, well, anyway.
Yeah.
But my brother Bob, I'm shocked at the influence that these conservatives still have after twice being proven that conservatism does not work and puts us into depressions. How can they still have? I mean, I can understand part
of it's because it's generational, Rick. You have within your living memory the words of people who survived the last time the Republican Party did this to America.
Right.
I have it in my living memory as well. But the vast majority of people who have been caught out in this crap storm, if I may, don't.
Yeah.
They don't. They don't have a grandmother who was born in 1894. Who told, our dear friend Nanette called in last night and pled with people. If there are young ones in your home, sit them at your knee and tell them what Republicans do to this country every time they get a chance. Tell them the stories. And see, that was done with Nanette, that was done with you, that was done with me, and that was done with a whole bunch of the Horn audience, and that is why we are liberals, Rick. Because we have a connection to a past when the only hope that America had was the determination of the people themselves rising up to make government in its own image do what the people needed. And that was the FDR administration. And that was that Congress that passed Social Security without a single Republican vote in either the House or the Senate. And that is the America we're trapped in today and trying to correct by the same measures. Sorry, soapbox off.
No, I'm sorry. You're exactly right. You know how Social Security got started? FDR picked a social worker. She wasn't told to pick a group of people. She picked a group of really intelligent people, college professors, politicians, everybody, put them all in one room, locked the door, set a bottle of Jack Daniels in the middle of the table, and when that bottle was empty, we had Social Security. God's honest truth. It was all written in the span of the time it took to drink a bottle of Jack Daniels.
And before that, there was a man named Huey Long in Louisiana who proposed a system far more broad than Social Security and whose ideas were co-opted by the Roosevelt administration that led to that that interlude with that bottle bottled in bond.
It was probably the reason why it went so fast and so easy. They probably had it all ready to go. But, you know, maybe that's what we need to do again. We got a problem. Set down a bottle of Jack Daniels, and you ain't leaving until it's finished or that we're finished. Get it done. But, sir, I know I've taken an awful lot of your time.
Oh, you can never take up too much. But, Rick, thank you so much for the validation, frankly. I appreciate it. I sincerely do, and I know I and the rest of the Horn audience appreciate and reverence, frankly, the work that you do.
It is absolutely nothing. The way to fill the time. Enjoy, my friend.
Take care, brother. We'll talk to you soon, and have a great weekend.
Oh, I'm going to do my best.
All right.
Sir.
Bye now. That, of course, is a Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. From deep in the heart of the heart of Texas, Rick Goodner's program comes your way 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Saturday evening and continues in rotation with the Rick Smith Show out of Pennsylvania and Night Sounds with Billy Shears through the weekend up until 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday evening when you get a live dose, all foxed up, with John Fox. And let's keep it rolling. Hey, Juanita.
Can I make a little comment about Rick Goodner?
Sure.
You know, a person like that's a great talent because they hear some horrible things. I mean, and, you know, most people can't take it. I know I used to have people confide in me, and a lot of them, I just couldn't take it. But it's a special gift. You know, it's a talent.
You know, maybe that's why they call lawyers and doctors and psychotherapists and folks like that. Maybe that's why they call that a profession instead of a job. Because you know what? You can get done with your job at the end of the day and you can leave the job.
Yeah.
But you've got to find a way to live with what you hear and what you see as a lawyer. Or as a psychotherapist, or a social worker, or a physician.
Well, someone that does what he does, though, they really, because depressed people are the most depressing people to be around, and I've been one, you know, and you don't hardly want to be around yourself, and nobody hardly wants to be around you, and you can't blame them. It's a gift. And I've listened to his show some. I haven't been able to hear all of them, but I've listened to quite a few of them. I think he's a fantastic person.
He is, and he calls it like he sees it, and I'm just proud as punch to have him on the team.
Oh, yeah, it's a blessing. And, you know, this is not what I called about, but, you know, I wanted to say something. Something's been bothering me about cornbread.
Okay, cornbread?
Yeah, that's another thing, you know. You know, you and I were saying, oh, you don't put sugar in it and all that. But, you know, when they first came up with the idea of cornbread, the corn that they grew back then was naturally sweet. And you don't get it. You don't get that ground meal like you do then. And I can understand why some people would want a little sugar in it. And I just thought, I don't know, I just felt like I was being so adamant, you know. I think about stupid things like that sometimes, but really, you know.
Oh, I've had it both ways. It's just a matter of what you grow up with. And if yeah. if I understand Rick correctly, and I love it this way too. Chop up some jalapenos in there too. And some whole kernel corn. You know that canned corn you can get that's got the little pieces of bell pepper chopped up in it too? to add that and some chopped onion, some chopped jalapeno into your cornbread batter and bake it that way. Whoo! Man.
Have you ever had it with crackling?
Yeah, see, now I know what cracklings is or are.
Yeah.
But I got, somebody queried me one night, Bob, what in the world's a cracklin'? Cracklin', yeah, cracklin' bread was big where I grew up. And yummy, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, adding roasty, toasty pork to cornbread, what could possibly be wrong with that?
Right. Right. Yeah, the Southern diet is a killer.
Oh, and to sit there with an ice cold glass of sweet milk and some, you know, I was raised doing it with buttermilk too, and just dip it and go.
Yeah.
Woo!
And you know, I want some buttermilk so bad, but it costs so much money. My gosh.
Well, it does, and it gets worse if you got a habit like mine. Because remember, I'm a cholesterol and triglyceride factory.
Yeah.
And I don't like that thin, watery buttermilk. I like the whole milk buttermilk.
Oh yeah.
And because I usually keep a jug of that around for making cornbread.
Uh huh. Yeah.
But there are times that I'll just get on one and sit there and pour a glass and have some because golly,
yeah.
Moses. And for people who hate it, I bet you that there are. That 60% of the listening audience hearing us right now and later on the podcast are sitting there visibly shuddering at the thought of buttermilk right now.
Right.
My daughters despise it.
Yeah. My son don't like it either.
But when I was a kid, I'd get a little glass of it sometimes, and Mama would grind up some black pepper in it.
Oh.
But yeah, mighty, mighty good stuff. And you know, oddly enough, one of the things growing up, and now that we know what we learned, you know, last summer, that I am literally bass ackwards on the insides. I would have a sick stomach when I was a little kid, and the doctor, and these are crazy things, but they always worked. The doctor always told my mother, get him to drink some sweet tea or some flat Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Or a little glass of buttermilk. And between that and a teaspoon of white Cairo syrup.
Yeah.
That was the stomach medicine that I had for the first 12 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I would run from that white Cairo syrup like some children ran from castor oil. Golly Moses. Oh.
Same consistency.
Oh.
Not quite as bad.
But to me,
black drops.
And my wife. Oh, apparently that was foisted upon her in her childhood.
Yeah, was the powder. My grandmother, she believed in that powder stuff. Powder's kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the other, you know, the sweet kind. But all of it was terrible. All of it was awful. But I wasn't as bad off. It was one of my aunts. I found this out later. My cousin wrote an article for the newspaper, and I just laughed and laughed and laughed because her mother, which was my grandmother's oldest daughter, every weekend she purged them out with that. Every weekend. Her and her two brothers. Just laughed at that. I thought, golly, I didn't know that, but she's about 10 years older than me, you know, and she started writing, you know, when she was in her 60s. And it was so funny the way she wrote it. But she said they just hated to see the weekends come because here come Mama with that black drop.
I kid you not, Juanita, I have got little chills running up and down my spine right now. you know how you get them shivers and somebody will look at you and say somebody just walked across your grave? I got one of those that's just ongoing talking about this.
Let's get off that subject.
In a hurry.
I watched The View today, and, you know, Condoleezza Rice was on there.
Was she really?
Yes, she was. Do you know she's hired a publicist, or she's with some talent agency? And of course, she didn't talk about that. But
what is she going on? Is she going to be the piano player in a cat house or something? Talent agency?
She doesn't know yet what she's going to do. They did ask her that. But she was really vague about some of her answers. Surprise. But one of them was Sharon, you know, said something about, she was talking about making mistakes. They were, I think Barbara asked her, what mistakes did she regret? And she said, well, you know, things have been so hectic and all. I never really have thought. I'm sure there are some and all that kind of stuff. And she's talking about that they made the mistake of thinking there were, Hussein had all those weapons and all. But she said, we did the right thing going into Iraq. But anyway, Sherry says to her, said, what about Katrina? Don't you think there was a lot of mistakes there? She said, well, yes, but it wasn't Bush's fault. And she said, and Joy said, what about him saying good going, Brownie, you know?
Yeah.
And she said, well, he actually at the time thought that he was doing a good job. He didn't know. And she's really, he's just such a wonderful man.
Hard to stomach, isn't it?
You better believe it. I couldn't have heard those people, though, in the Congress or where the Senate or whoever that was that talking about him being the lion.
Yeah, that was Mr. Franks of Arizona, I do believe.
Yeah.
Trent Franks, I think.
And Elizabeth is expecting again. She announced that today.
She's bred again, has she?
Yeah, but she's sad.
Maybe there's cause for celebration for the rest of us. Will she have an extended maternity leave?
Well, I don't know. She wasn't gone too long with this last one. But I wanted, if you got time, I wanted to tell you about a couple of things I saw on the Senate, in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, you know Pat Roberts,
mm-hmm.
The senator?
Yeah, from Kansas.
Yeah. He was talking about medical care, you know, about the one for the children, CHIP. Is it a
CHIP
program?
CHIP, yes.
And he said, well, we have for the children in our state. And he says it's just for the children of you know, families that can't afford it, you know, there's a certain amount. He said, I was shocked to discover that in some states they cover adults. And he said, in some states, you know, people make $100,000, even one made $200,000, and they got all that coverage. I was just shocked. And then he said something about, you know, in New York, they allow for over $20,000 more. And he said, I just said, why? They said, well, living expenses are higher up there. Well, his solution was, well, you know, if I was them, I would just move. All that nonsense.
Oh. You know, that's like that old gag about the Republican who found out that most accidents happened within 2 miles of 2 miles of home, so he moved.
2 miles of what?
Never mind. That was just bad. That was just bad. Poor attempt at humor.
I can listen to it later.
Okay. Well, that's true. You can. So,
yeah.
Right. But that's their answer to everything. Look away from it or pretend it doesn't exist. You know, that's exactly what Rick Goodner was just talking about. You know, if you don't pay the social workers, the social workers don't see the problems, and then they don't
set in stone with him, and that's it.
Yeah, their way or the highway.
Yeah, is this set in stone, their way? But didn't you think at first when Obama got in that first it looked like some of them would accede to him, and then Rush Limbaugh started spouting off his different things, and they. No Republican voted for that bill in for the Ledbetter bill. It's the
stimulus.
Yeah. And also I saw Ron Paul the thing. I just see bits and pieces of things. I don't look at all of that stuff anymore. But he was on there. And I certainly don't agree with some things he said, some things he believes, but somebody called up and they said, well, you know, the Democrats have been in there for 2 years and everything is their fault. This is all their fault. All they can do is spend money. We don't need to spend no more money. And God bless him. He said, well, you know, I'm in the Republican Party, but says you can't blame the Democrats on this. Is the Republicans that we've had, they've spent. That's the cause of a lot of this trouble. So I thought that was pretty nice of him to do that.
Well, that it's at least marginally honest, I think.
Yeah.
A Republican never does anything that he doesn't have a motive for.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't believe, you know, I don't like the things that he's saying and of course, Rush and them are saying about Franklin Roosevelt, FDR.
Oh, no, this is a complete, utterly dishonest historical revisionism.
Oh, yeah. And the problem is, it's like saying that there's, what we did was not torture to those people.
My friends, it was just like a fraternity hazing prank.
Yeah, and a lot of people believe that. They said it, and they believe it. Until it happens to them, if it happens to them, then maybe they'll believe it. But if it happens to liberals, well, we deserve it, you know.
Well, or it's you know, liberalism that, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll let you go and.
I understand. Well,
isn't that nice of me to let you go?
you know, you're always welcome here. And good to hear from you, Juanita. And let me know if you decide to sugar that next pan of cornbread.
Well, I probably won't, but I'm not going to knock anybody.
You take care, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye now.
Night-night.
That's our View correspondent, Juanita, calling from Florida. It's about 8 minutes past the hour. And you are welcome to join in the rest of the conversation for the remainder of the evening. It is entirely a matter of as you see fit. But we're going to take a little break, come back. There's other stuff, and some of it, like I said, is even gigglesome, so maybe we'll find our way to that on the way. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This, of course, is The Horn.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. And they say they are Christ's disciples. They don't look like Jesus to me. It feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got politicians running races on corporate cash.
That is Miss Iris DeMent, Wasteland of the Free. You know, I'm going to say this because I'm a mean person. I would like to take Mitch McConnell and John Cornyn and Kay Bailey Hutchison and Jim Demented And who's that waste of air? Jeff Sessions and Tom Coburn and that other goober from Oklahoma. That whole filthy Republican senatorial crowd. And you know how we, you know, the Bush administration's already said it's not torture to do this, so it would be all right. I'd like to take those worthless sacks of protoplasm. And I would like to crank that song up and put it on permanent loop. And, you know, and nothing's too good for these right-wing repig-licking bastards. I want some good speakers. I want every word just hot-wired into their hateful little repig-licking brains. And I just want to put that Wasteland of the Free on a permanent tape loop. Well, we don't have tape anymore. But just a permanent loop. Just hit that repeat button. Subwoofers. I mean, I want all the beauty and the glory of that. I mean, that stunning production. And I want it at about 130 decibels in a concrete room. And I want McConnell and Cornyn and Sessions and Saxbitch Hambliss. I want John Kyle of Arizona. I want all those filthy animals listening to that for about 8 days straight until they start tearing at their own hair and flesh and their own ears and start tearing at each other. When the meaning, not the loudness, but the meaning of that song comes through into their soulless beings. Oh, mercy, that would be delightful. Speaking figuratively, of course. You know, we did that with the Barney the Dinosaur song. We did that with any number of, you know, really good rock and roll. And we did it to people who were guilty of nothing more, in many instances, of anything other than being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I want them to hear those real live lyrics. And I want them to live those lyrics. As far as maternity leave for Elizabeth Hasselbeck is concerned, our buddy David in Tennessee is, I think he's been, he has been parsing his bard, i.e. Shakespeare. He said, short, bro, short, very short maternity leave. That Hasselbeck witch will drop that 8-pound skin of protoplasm in Lupe's lap and hit the set. She got a big-ass check to grab. Care for a child? Bah, not so much. What's that got to do with Shakespeare? Falstaff, wasn't it? Give me a capon and a skin of sack. But how? We have heard the bells at midnight. Yeah, I do believe. I do believe. Now, I said we had some funnies to close the hour with. And we do. Funny in a sort of an ex. I got to pass a message along. I heard from Boss Man Wayne during the break, and he was reflecting on the fact that Lily Ledbetter got herself a law, but she never did get what she was due and owing. And Wayne suggested a bit of activism. And you know, there's no end to the activism we can do. I promised, and turned out to sort of make myself a little bit less than honest, and for that I apologize. I promised last night toward the end of the program that I would have a post up about
how to get how to work toward getting Flush Flimball off the air in your local market. And I said I would post it over at the forum, but I didn't have any luck. Not for want of trying, but I was waiting. Our webmaster and chief engineer, master musician, and horn host John Fox told me to just wait because there's some things going on with the website to make the functionality. He told me to wait, and you know my login, technical stuff. But I was later contacted by our good buddy Scott from Sweden, who said that he had already transcribed my remarks and was prepared to put them in the forum, and said he would be working with our forum moderator, Lottie, to try to get it up there. So if you want that, you can go and look for it. But that's a, you know, and that's a little bit, the reason I went to that is because it's a little bit of activism. And activism is the very heart and soul of the reason for the horn's existence. With that being the case, something else. And this was a bit of a little bit of activism, as suggested by Boss Man Wayne. And that is that we create a campaign. And I'll bet you we could. I will leave it to anyone who wishes to do so to create this at the Horn Forum, and then go far and wide to liberal sites. Because if we could get 200,000 people to see this and act on it, we could make Lilly Ledbetter right. And that is a campaign for every woman in America who is working for a wage, to simply send Lilly Ledbetter $1, a dollar. The fight that she fought, surely to God, is worth a dollar. And I thought that was a magnificent idea on Wayne's part. So give it some thought. But anyway, that's an opportunity. So I wanted to just sort of put that out there into the universe and let you consider it. Now, I said some fun stuff. And this is that. And it is, well, okay, let's start with the real giggle first. I got this earlier today from the once and future world's greatest LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. You know, it was a couple of weeks ago that I first became introduced to the Christian Anti-Defamation Commission. And we had some real fun with them. Well, they are not going to take anything away from us. They're going to keep providing us fodder for some great shows for years to come, I suspect. Because they are in the middle of a full-on, what my mother used to call, tizzy. What some others call a hissy. Headline: Seven Reasons Barack Obama Is Not a Christian. There is a spiritual emergency in America. Barack Obama is in the process of trying to recreate the Christian faith in his own very liberal and unorthodox image. Still hammering the liberal thing. I mean, anybody who listens to this program, to the Horn, to most liberal radio, will understand in a damn hurry that Barack Obama is no liberal. Barack Obama's in the process of trying to create a Christian faith in his own very liberal and unorthodox image, built on a foundation of radical black liberation theology. Is this the part where I have to play Stokely Carmichael again? Radical black liberation theology. You know them. They can't be no Christians. Christ was as white as the driven snow. Theological liberalism and postmodernism. I thought that was a style of painting. not the theological liberalism part, but the postmodernism. At least it's an architectural style. Who knows what goes on in the right-wing evangelicals' minds? Obama is undermining historic biblical Christianity while claiming his is a... Now, see, I'm a professional reader of words. I'm down with the art of knowing words. But I can't help it when I get handed a bum script. I just read that as it is. While claiming his is a Christian. His is a Christian. These yokels write just about as well as George Bush speaks. In the process, he is defaming the Christian faith. Boil him in oil! Get out the Iron Maiden! Stretch him a little bit. That'll get that radical black liberation theology out of him. Agent Fred, that is called satire. This is radio. By declaring he is a Christian, yet denying Christianity's most essential truths and traditional morality, Obama is associating Christ with some of the most wicked practices imaginable, all of which are condemned in the Bible. By any historic or biblical standard, Barack Obama is not a Christian. Wow. So neither's Michelle and those precious little children, their daughters, Sasha and Malia, and everybody that goes to that Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. No, sorry. No. Wicked practices. Wicked ones. With his incredible celebrity status, Obama's ideas about spiritual matters have become very significant, and they are very dangerous. Now more than ever, Christianity is under attack from without and within. Well, they're under, if they're under attack from without, it's because they are without any true spirituality. But, you know, who the hell am I? We need your help to stand for Christ. Because, you know, Christ, he's the Lord of the universe, but he can't stand for himself. No, praise Jesus. Over the next few weeks, the Christian Anti-Defamation Commission will be releasing 7 short videos entitled 7 Reasons Why Barack Obama is Not a Christian. And you got to sign up for the email alerts. For you, I'll sign up. Okay? It's critical that we spread the truth about Obama's fake Christianity so that Christians can defend. How can you... Now, I know there are people of faith in this audience, and I mean you no offense. And you know that I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, okay? But how, given the history of so-called Christianity, and if you know 10 cents worth about it, how can you declare that anything is not historical Christianity? I mean, for instance, the Christian sects that the American Christians bombed into non-existence in Iraq, their worship practices weren't exactly in line with the Southern Baptist Convention's the general agreement on doctrine. Okay? Our concern's only spiritual. We pray for Barack Obama to repent and turn to Christ and his word. Which word? I mean, is that like, there's nowhere else in English where you say his word, that word and mean lots of words. It's not like deer and deer. I mean, granted, wow, your head's looking pretty good there, Bob. Where you been? I got my hair cut. Which one? No. Did you get a haircut? Several. His word. So don't worry, the great black man in the White House who ain't an evangelical hissy will continue, and it will provide great fun for quite some time to come. Meanwhile, however, we have to go back over to our dear old friend, Donald Wildman. Yes, Donald Wildman of the American Family Association. because you just, well, you can't, not at 29 minutes past the hour on Thursday evening, you can't just ride past this one. It's impossible. Because you know when you're dealing with something like the evangelical religion industry, you know that you're dealing with hypocrisy. I mean, that's a given. And pointing out some of that, we have a lot of fun doing that. On the other hand, however, occasionally they surpass even their own abilities to be stunningly, self-ignorantly moronic and ironic. And by that I mean this latest email, dated today, politely addressed, Dear Bob. Headline, the House just passed a bill raising taxes on every citizen by $3,333. I mean, they're lying and everything. Why couldn't they just go for the gold and do $6,666.66? The House just passed a bill raising taxes on every citizen by $3,333. But don't worry, you'll never have to pay it. Now, dang it, I know a little bit about the long division and the ciphering and the gazentas. And I'm pretty sure that that's actually $3,333.33 with just an infinite number of threes. But I guess they rounded. But don't worry, you'll never have to pay it. See what this new bill does with your money. Now, this is the stimulus bill. This is them still crying about the stimulus bill because they don't just do this for our amusement. These filthy bastards are dangerous. Old Donald Wildman, I don't even know if he's even seen in public anymore, but his creepy little pinch-faced picture is up in the corner of every one of these action alerts. AFA, P.O. Drawer 244-0107, Parkgate Drive, Tupelo, Mississippi, 38803. Please help us get this information into the hands of as many people as possible by forwarding it to your entire email list of family and friends. This is the hissy that they continue to have about the stimulus package, even though the Democrats already surrendered women's reproductive health care, and even though the Democrats already surrendered a highly symbolic little environmental renovation package for the nation's mall, even though we already, you know, peace and freedom by surrender, what we've been talking about, they're still having their tizzy. Why are they having their tizzy? They're having their tizzy because of what I was talking about earlier this evening. They did something big in the House, and they know it. Oh, the Democrats passed the stimulus package, but they passed it without a single Republican vote. And so that means that even though we gave up, even though we surrendered things, it still didn't matter a damn bit. And the Republicans still got their way, and the American Family Association, and all these evangelicals, and all these values voters, and all these right-wing organizations, they know they have a chance to really put the wood deep in America if they can just get the Senate to do the same thing. See, here's how it works. The Repiglicans obstruct anything that the Democrats want to do, any idea of anything remotely resembling progressive thought or progressive action or people-oriented government. And then when we continue to slide, they look up and go, well, them Democrat ideas done failed. Better give it back to the Repiglicans, because, see, Sunshine, everything hinges on 2010, and they know what the odds are of coattails in 2010. They know that off-year elections are, by and large, not good for a sitting president. And so, They're here to make sure that this country does not get well. Even the best of economic forecasts suggest that the problems are going to persist for at least another year to year and a half. The Republican job is to make sure that the problems persist for 2 to 2.5 to 3 to 4 years so that they can then Carterize Barack Obama. And yes, I did mean for that to be reminiscent of the word cauterize. So what do we have here? The U.S. House of Representatives just passed the Merkin Recovery and Reinvestment Act 2009, H.R. 1. This bill, which eventually will cost $1 trillion, will increase the amount of taxes owed by every person in America by $3,333. But you don't need to worry because you'll never have to pay it. Neither will your children. It will be your grandchildren and their children who will pay this tax. It is utterly Wait. I'm not even going to do this with the funny little redneck voice. This is as newsreadery as I can get. This is as straight up as I can do this, because I want this to burn all the way into your ears and all the way down to your belly when you hear what this supporter of George Bush, who robbed us blind, is about to say. When you hear this loyal Bushy, when you hear this Bush voter who claims a million loyal Bushy Bush voters and the values voting conservatives, I want you to know that this has not been delivered in any wise but straight. Here it is. But you don't need to worry, because you will never have to pay it. Neither will your children. It will be your grandchildren and their children who will pay this tax. It is utterly immoral to force our great-grandchildren to pay off our debt. Hear that again. It is utterly immoral to force our great-grandchildren to pay off our debt. My first inclination is to say something sarcastic or snarky, and I apologize for that. But do you know what? Donald E. Wildman, founder and chairman of the American Family Association, is right at the wrong time. I share the sentiment that it is wrong to hang debt around the necks of the unborn, because I actually do care about the unborn. I'm also rather fond of the recently born, the ones who live in the loving arms of their parents and grandparents, who haven't seen much of the outside world, who have perhaps not even heard the word deficit or Republican or Democrat yet go through their tiny little pure ears. There are two of them not far from me now. And Donald Wildman is right at the wrong time. Never did they publish a single word along these lines when their God Almighty George W. Bush was actually doing this to those children and grandchildren. Never did they utter a single solitary word when George Bush was not only doing this to our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Not only did they not utter a word, they egged it on, and they winked at the fact that that deficit, that debt, was run up in the name of murder.
Here, I'll channel the bard myself. Heady murder. Murder most foul. That debt was rung up in the George W. Bush administration and wholeheartedly supported by organizations like the American Family Association. And it bought and paid for a stew of human flesh and blood and bone, sinew and gristle. It paid for mothers wailing in a foreign tongue in the middle of the dark and hopeless night. It paid for bombs and missiles and aircraft and bullets that left up to 1 million Iraqi civilians cold and dead on the ground. It paid for senseless slaughter that left one of the world's oldest Christian populations devastated and nigh destroyed. It paid for all of that. And the values-oriented Christians of the American Family Association and their evangelical ilk smiled and waved their hands in the air and swayed back and forth to the movement of the Holy Spirit, while that Spirit stalked the world and brought death and deprivation and torture. But that isn't the end of Brother Wildman's outrageous hypocrisy. There's another paragraph, and I'll read this as straight as I read the last one. Add this amount to the $35,000 which every individual already owes, and that increases each individual's debt to $38,000. Are you nigh to flopping in your chair yet? Is this just the most gut-rending hypocrisy that ever you have heard? Add this amount to the $35,000 which every individual already owes, and that increases each individual's debt to $38,000. Reverend Wildman, where did that $35,000 debt come from, sir? Who created that $35,000 debt? Who empowered that $35,000 debt? Who talked about how George W. Bush was a Christian man and went to the polls and passed out flyers in church parking lots and threatened to excommunicate church members who voted for Al Gore or John Kerry? Who did all that and made that $35,000 debt possible? Nay, even enabled that $35,000 millstone hung about the necks of the unborn and undreamt of. Who did that, Reverend Wildman? Whom? Why, you did, Reverend Wildman. You did. And your vile generation of vipers that hang on every poisonous, acid-laden word that drips from your fangs did that, Brother Wildman. They did it in Alabama, and they did it in Oklahoma. They did it in Mississippi. Even Mississippi. They did it in Arkansas and Tennessee. They did it in South Carolina and Georgia and Florida, Reverend Wildman. They did it in North Carolina and Virginia. They did it in Kentucky. They did it in Missouri. Reverend Wildman, everywhere that you, your voice and your words went, and everywhere that you had nothing but accolades for what you claimed was a patriotic president who was actually nothing more than a psychopathic, giggling murderer, you did that, Reverend Wildman. You did. And he shall be cast into the lake of fire for all eternity, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. What precisely in that $3,000, that $3,333 as compared to the $35,000 that Reverend Wildman and his toxic ilk, what's in that $3,333 to which he so vehemently and vociferously objects? Don't you wonder? Well, let's take a look and see. The Reverend Wildman and the Family Values crowd at the American Family Association, they object to $20 million for the removal of small to medium-sized fish passage barriers. I guess it doesn't go toward killing anyone, so it's not worth the money. They also profoundly object to $400 million for sexually transmitted disease prevention. They cite that as page 60 of the Senate Appropriations Committee report, quote, the Centers for Disease Control estimate that approximately 19 million new STD infections occur annually in the United States. The committee has included $400 million for testing and prevention of these conditions. What shall we do, Brother Wildman? Wait for your wrinkled old healing hands of faith to lay about someone's genitals and heal them? They object to rehabilitating off-road ATV trails, and $25 million for that, because, you know, our public spaces in America aren't worth it. They object to $70 million to support supercomputing activities for climate research. Of course, being right-wing evangelicals, they would just as soon we didn't do any climate research. And this is I'm sure this is a great big honking stinking lie. They object to it. Do you know how hard it is for me not to do my little redneck voice when I'm reading this stuff? I hope you can appreciate what I'm doing here. They object to $150 million for honeybee insurance. That's what they call it, honeybee insurance. Just like they invented partial birth abortion, they call this honeybee insurance. And as a quote, they use page 102 of the Senate Appropriations Committee report that says, and I quote, the secretary shall use up to $50 million per year and $150 million in the case of 2009 from the trust fund to provide emergency relief to eligible producers of livestock, honeybees, and farm-raised fish to aid in the reduction of losses due to disease, adverse weather, or other conditions such as blizzards and wildfires as determined by the secretary. See, Reverend Wildman and his children of the night couldn't be bothered to object when Bayer Crop Sciences almost single-handedly wiped out the honeybee population. They never object to anything that corporate America does. So instead of being relief from losses suffered by the people who are actually raising the food that that jolly old goon consumes, they would prefer that farmers go under and just have done. And then maybe things will get nasty enough that we'll have the rapture, you see. Personally, I think it would be worth, I'd get, honeybees are one of those things that, to the extent that I see some identifiable God, I can see them in honey. I can see it, him, she, they in a honeybee. Because there's nothing but pure amazement in what the honeybee does. But this is not the part where I wax rhapsodic about honeybees. They want me to send emails to my senators and ask them to vote against the stimulus bill. These people are tax exempt. These people pay not a penny of the tax dollars they're complaining about being spent. These people contribute nothing to the American economy except to constantly stand with their hands out saying, "Gimme, gimme, gimme. My name's Jimmy. Gimme." They do nothing for no one. They took $500,000 of contributor money and spent it to take away the rights already acknowledged in the state of California of all people to marry the person that they love. They took $500,000 to take those rights away. They fed not a soul. They clothed not a soul. They housed not a soul. They visited no one in hospital or in prison. They used it to promote hate. Oh, and they provide a detailed list, if you want it, of the stuff that they of the stuff that they object to, these things that they don't think that their God wants to have happen. Yes, absolutely. So I'm not trying to be a nattering nabob of negativity, but this is what you face. This is what we face every blessed time that we try to get something done in this country. There are arrayed against us an army that feeds and marches on nothing but hatred, that wants to take the current misery of this country and funnel it through their doors to suck what little these people in misery have left into their tax-free coffers. Don't be surprised if the Republican Party doesn't kill the stimulus bill. Don't be surprised in the least. And when and if they do, know, don't believe, but know who is responsible. Know the tree by the poisonous fruit that it bears. We have about 7 minutes left in the program, and I promised Ben Birch that I would make as impassioned a plea as I could. Ben, you know, runs WhiteRoseSociety.org, and everything that you hear here goes through WhiteRoseSociety.org. I will tell you that January has been a tough month here for the Horn. Every month is tough. We never get close to our monthly goal. That has negative implications, but we go forward. We're traveling next month to Washington, D.C., and we have been kindly provided with almost $400 to help get that done. So this is not the Bob makes a pitch for the horn portion of the program, and I don't want you thinking that it was. This is for Ben. Ben provides podcasts and live streams of everything that happens on the horn via WhiteRoseSociety.org, and he never sends a bill, and he never charges, and he is in need. I got an email from Ben today saying that he had a shortfall on paying for the servers for the horn of about $300. More would be nice. But he does need your help, because the horn runs on your generosity, and so does WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you go to WhiteRoseSociety.org, you will see there a more detailed explanation of why revenues have fallen off so precipitously for Ben. The short answer to that question is it has everything in the world to do with Air America. And you can read the rest of it and find out the details. Ben needs your help. And you know what? Ben doesn't get to pay for the servers. No horn. It's that simple. So where I'm usually pitching for your support of the horn, I'm doing it indirectly this time by asking you to send your support to WhiteRoseSociety.org. It is serious, and it is the end of the month. So if you have the ability to do so, please help Ben out. Help him over this hump. He very seldom sends me anything saying, hey, Bob, help me raise some funds. So when he does, I know that he is in earnest. So if you can, please help, with the understanding that if Ben goes dark, the horn goes dark. That simple. So thank you to everyone who called in this evening, who participated by email or in the chat room, who posts on the forum, who downloads podcasts, who listens live. Thank you. I hope that you begin to get from it as much as we get from you. Thank you to Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to ELO Sue, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Texas Betsy, our blogger. Thank you to Lottie, the moderator of our forums. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Truly, they stand upstream, because the rest of us are all downstream. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today is a special Inside Scoop, I think, where we walk back and try to figure out how the Bush administration may be putting tentacles into the current Obama administration. You may have read in the news that Attorney General Designate Eric Holder, at least for today, will be voted in on Monday, and it's largely expected that he will be voted in by quite a large margin. And perhaps the reason for that is because, well, there's really not much opposition to Eric Holder, mostly because, well, he's not that controversial a guy. He is a ex-judge, an ex-prosecutor, someone who's highly respected in the Clinton administration. And I should say, by the way, also that he got a 17-2 approval rating in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So the question is, why did we wait till Monday? You may recall that the ranking Republican of the